Hello and welcome to episode 11 of Flourish Together Supporting Women in Social Enterprise podcast. I'm Rana, one of the directors of Flourish Together CIC, and we're an organisation that helps women changemakers like you to flourish. Welcome back to episode 11, where we'll be focusing on crowdfunding.
And I'm Nicola Torkington, one of the co-founders at Flourish Together. We've taken a few months off to focus on delivering enterprise projects, various programmes and supporting lots more women changemakers to get start and to grow their social enterprises. But we thought now, coming through the pandemic, was a great opportunity to have a spotlight on the topic of crowdfunding. I think it's been used quite heavily through the pandemic. We've got a great example coming up, and it may still be something that people are considering before the end of the year. So we hope you found this, are going to find this of interest. So in this podcast, we're hoping to share the benefits of crowdfunding, top tips, and some success stories from local changemakers. And we've learned firsthand how time consuming this can be. We've run 4 successful crowd campaigns over the years, and we've also supported around 10 different women changemakers to develop crowdfunding campaigns. And across the board, they've secured in the region of £200,000 between them. So coming up, we've got 2 great interviews. Shortly, we'll hear from Simone from the Goodness Collective, who ran a successful crowdfunding campaign in Stockport to get funds to groups and organisations working on COVID response activities.
So first up, we've got Heather Waters from NatWest Bank. Heather's been a senior manager for over 12 years, working mainly in the north of England. Everything that she's done over the last couple of years is to help startups and women-led businesses grow. And more recently, she's been working on their Back Her Business programme, which is all around helping women to test their business and raise money through crowdfunding. Nicola and Heather talk why women are suited to crowdfunding campaigns, some of the wider skills that you can learn whilst doing it. And Heather also shares examples of campaigns she's supported in the past, including Julianne Parker of A Million Stars in Liverpool, amongst others.
I start by asking Heather just what it is that makes crowdfunding a useful thing for women entrepreneurs to look into.
So when the bank were looking at what we could do to support women to start and fund them in the businesses, they obviously did some research and they found that, you know, 2 elements of crowdfunding that came through that actually more women than men used it. And there's a real social element to it. It's an awful lot of social enterprises use that platform. And we noticed an awful lot of women who were starting businesses, there was a social element to their businesses. Not saying all legal entities were kind of not-for-profit legal entities, but that was a real strong element to it. Because it's about creating a crowd, it's about creating your audience. It lent more to women than it did to men. And, you know, and that's proved, you know, we'd say the one particular platform we use, it was demonstrated time and time again.
You can't run a crowdfunding campaign thinking, put it on and people will come. It's not like, like Woodstock. You have to really have a crowd.
I think there's 2 things that women tend to start businesses that actually other women will align to. They recognise the need that they're trying to, you know, the problem they're trying to solve. And women are quite supportive in that kind of way. I mean, I've got a household, all sorts of things I've bought to help crowdfunding programs where I've seen people do things. I mean, the latest one, some jewelry I bought because a colleague had liked it on Twitter. A lot of us do that because we want to support women actually, and they're selling a product that we like or we need.
I think what we know from having supported 10 or 15 women-led ventures and other social enterprises actually in doing this is it builds so many wider skills. So it's really interesting that you hear, you know, somebody that set up a crowdfund to sell this jewelry and do whatever. The transferable skills that people get and communities and social enterprises and charities developing a little bit more, you know, social media development, their marketing skills, their budgeting and financing. You still have to think all of this stuff through before you put your total goal out there. So there's a lot to learn in planning and preparing these and then running them.
Yeah.
And I wonder whether through the Back of Business or through other projects that you've supported, has there been any sort of negative feedback?
We've had people who failed because they basically had an idea, they put it on and hadn't done enough work beforehand. You see that if you go on the platforms now, if you go on any crowdfunding platform, you get the ones that have been on there for like 28 days and they've had like 2 people back it. So I think there's an awful lot of tips and lessons about if you're going to do one of these, but they're not easy. I know you and I've had that conversation in the past. They're not,
but they can work incredibly well with a bit
And I've seen success. I mean, I'm just thinking Julie is one of the first ones we got involved with, and she had a fantastic social enterprise based over in Liverpool. And I remember seeing her at an event about a week and a half into her 4 weeks. And she was really, really struggling. And we had to kind of, you know, luckily she was at a women's event. We kind of got her an opportunity to talk to some women about her products, about what she was trying to do, what she's trying to achieve. And on that day, I think about 10 women backed to that day just because they love what she's trying to do. you know, we just like gave her, like, put our arms around her that day, gave us the help, but also gave her, like, you know, you need to think of this, you need to think of that. Did a bit of a brainstorm with her, and she was really losing the will to live. I remember getting a message, direct message on LinkedIn, like, oh, it's not working, I'm going to sack it off, I'm not going to do it. And I was like, no, you need to carry on. And I think she actually extended her time on her. She actually got them to give her another 5 days, and she did hit a target. She exceeded it in the end. All worked out really well. But, you know, she then became our ambassador to go and talk to groups of women who were thinking of going down. I'm like, oh my goodness, this is what I learned. I wasn't prepared well enough. I hadn't got my marketing in place. And she recognised the work that she needs to do on a regular basis of how she has to do that. And she kind of caught up in the end, but it made it very hard work for her.
Well, but sometimes you need someone like that to tell it like it is, to kind of give people a reality check, don't you, in terms of moving forward. So that's a great example. I wonder whether there are any other sort of examples or kind of highlight campaigns that spring to mind.
No, there's a couple of ladies I met who were based over in Leeds, and actually it was about the people they employed that really kind of got my attention, because they employed people who were quite unemployable for other organisations. They kind of really reached out and made sure they were really inclusive in the people they employed, and it just kind of captured my heart at that point. So they were looking to expand, and they were a bakery, and so they had product. So basically, they were looking to open this new bakery. So they put on the platform, they had a fantastic audience already. So they just basically went out to their audience and said, we're going to do this. We need to raise this much money. And they did amazingly well. But because they went and told their audience beforehand, this is what they were going to do. So they had like a story running for about 2 months. Then they launched it for a month. And basically, people prepaid for their goods. And they put other things in, like Christmas hampers. So you paid in March for something that went out at Christmas time. And they did fantastically well. But because they had enough time, they really stepped back and thought, what would make people, A, want to support us, because people like the ethics of who they are and what they did and how they operated. They love their products. In some ways, you could say, well, that's a lot easier for them because they had already had an audience, but they actually worked the audience up and they created some new products. They did an apron. They don't normally sell those things. They did a bag. They don't normally sell those kind of things, but they did some different things from the bakery.
Merchandise, yeah. No, I mean, and lots of people do that. I think you've got to be careful when you're creating these rewards that they're not losing your money and that you're going to make enough of a profit margin on them. That's what we were saying. But for a business like that, they've then got new add-on sales that they can perhaps keep in the future.
Just the limited edition things as well. So they just took the time. I think that was the lesson learned with them, is actually, so the work they were on. So when they were ready to go, like you said, they had 30, 40, 50 people ready to go. The minute they launched it, waiting for them.
And I think, you know, there are lots of sort of product businesses or kind of pre-register type stuff. I know we work with a lot of people who are more sort of service organisations around the sort of social enterprise world. And what we find, or what we encourage them to do, is think about not just the individuals, the community, the beneficiaries that they're working with, but a crowdfund can also be a really good focus for perhaps some of the housing associations, public sector, councils, that people who they've kind of warmed up and that they know are interested in their work, but they're not ready to back them, give them a contract or do much with them yet, but they might sling, you know, 500 quid, £1,000 in the pot to endorse what they're doing, sponsor something, or perhaps in return for some consultancy or other.
Absolutely. It creates a different audience. I mean, actually, just on the councils that I do know of, a council in the Northwest actually put money into a business, actually in a limited company business, actually invested in one through crowdfunding, which actually huge dividends for them. But also that business absolutely loves their local council because they back them as well. So there is those opportunities. I think there's no one that you can't approach in these kind of things. And even if you just get them to endorse it and share your story, sometimes if you can't put it funds into, it's actually getting to echo what a great thing you're trying to achieve and trying to do in their area. And just almost like, you know, this is part of the planning. You know, I can't stress it, you know, more than anything else, you need to have that plan and have those conversations, a bit like the bakery lady. So they went out and actually talked to everybody for months before. It was almost like a mini frenzy by the time they launched it.
And certainly through COVID and through coming back from furlough or back to reality, using an opportunity like that to kind of re-engage your audience is potentially no bad thing. I think the tips and the lessons, you know, that you've shared there are going to be really invaluable. Are you, any one final sort of golden tip for people who are thinking about crowdfunding?
I guess the one is grow your audience. I mean, you will grow it through that, but actually it is to have an audience aware of what you're trying to achieve, and almost like, say, give yourself at least, 2 months line up beforehand and talk to different people. Just make them aware. And if they can't back you, see if they'll share your story.
Absolutely, yeah. There's more than one way to get there. Fantastic. Well, thanks a lot for your time, Heather, and really appreciate that.
You're welcome.
That's a great first interview with some really valuable insights on what works. So we'll recap that later on in the episode.
Our next interview is with Simone Callahan from the Goodness Collective in Stockport, and they connect the business and the community and voluntary sector together.
Tell me how the idea for crowdfunding came about as an option for you to explore.
So we had an idea to do a crowdfund for Sector 3 at the start of, well, it was just after lockdown. So obviously we were all locked down in March. We saw firsthand kind of how quickly the voluntary community, faith and social enterprise sector, which I'm going to refer to as VCFSE. So we recognised that they had to step up really quickly. We're like filling that immediate gaps. People have seen like in their own communities to support people to access food and prescriptions because nobody was allowed out. Yes, people are scrambling to help. We could see that they were absolutely worked to death, working all kinds of hours, and it was impacting on their lives. But there wasn't really any more pots of money that had been released quickly. So Sector 3 being infrastructure support for Stockport, well, we need to do something to help our sector locally. And also one of the things that, so Jo McGrath, who's the lead at Sector 3, she was getting inquiries from places like housing associations saying, look, how do we help? So the crowdfunder seemed a perfect way of getting a financial response to some local need, and also giving those organisations such as the Housing Association somewhere to direct that assistance that they so wanted to give. So it was kind of making it easy and quick for them. The end goal for starting the crowdfund was to get money as quick as we could. And we know it wasn't immediate, but it was quicker than people waiting for grants to pop up and then applying. And it was smallish pots of money that we planned to distribute. We wanted to get it quickly to those organisations who were needed the most, and also to take away a lot of the paperwork, even the process of applying. It was a really quick and easy form. So making sure that we didn't create a cumbersome process. The criteria was that you were in Stockport and you were having a COVID response and that you were doing something that fitted with the big hashtag we used throughout the campaign was Keep Stockport Caring. And we tied all the social media and the asks into that. And the ambition of the fund was that that's what we were aiming to do, was allow those people who were on the front line doing the caring and the support to have the financial means to do that.
I'm really interested in how the mechanics of it worked. What platform did you use to do your crowdfunding?
So we used Just Giving. It felt quick and easy to set up. We are a charity, so there's reduced fees on there for fundraising. And it also was a fairly easy thing to push out quickly. It didn't take too much setting up.
So from when you had the idea, how long then did it take to put all the pitch onto Just Giving?
So I'd say we made a decision quite quickly around May time to get that crowdfunder started. And obviously this is a big thing with crowdfunding, and this is advice for anyone else who's planning it. You can't really just say, I'm going to do a crowdfunder and stick it on the internet and hope that people will find it. There's got to be a plan. So yes, there was the idea, but then we had to sit down and discuss who were we going to target, because again, it is targeted marketing. It isn't just stick your Just Giving page up, do a bit of social media and expect the money to roll in, because unfortunately it's not quite that easy. So it was, what is the message? So your comms plan, who you're going to reach out to and what message is it? Because what we say to individuals is different to what we say to businesses. And also the how we're going to distribute it in a transparent way. We had all of those thoughts that once we bring that money in, then we've got to deal with getting it back out and getting it back out quickly. So there's that whole planning behind it. So it was June that we actually launched the crowdfunder, and then we raised money between the money coming in. So you and I, if we wanted to donate to something we were passionate about, we could just put it on our credit card, whatever, £10, £20. But for a housing association who want to give up to £5,000, £10,000, there's a bit of paperwork process, so you can't do that overnight. So it wasn't a case of a crowdfunder where we set a 3-day limit it needed to have that time so that those processes in other larger organisations were able to work through.
Who did you target?
Well, again, I keep going on about the housing associations, but they were the easy win, really, because they were desperate to do something for their communities. You know, a lot of housing associations have a lot of local people living, often vulnerable people. They were the first to step up, and there was quite a few across Stockport who contributed, which we're really thankful for. Local business community, definitely. And funnily enough, the voluntary community sector supporting each other and individuals within that sector. Some of the voluntary community sector donated like £500 from their own funds because they couldn't use it at that time. You know, that's really inspiring for me. It's not just looking at this for ourselves. It's like, how can we support one another in all of this?
So tell me about some of the organisations that have benefited from the funding that you've given them through the crowdfunding campaign.
Well, there's been lots of different ways. We did get some money as part of the crowdfunder for some grants for food-related projects. So we were able to ring-fence that in a separate process for anything that was very food-related could apply to that pot. But it was also, you know, our young people's mental health was really low. So the Cherry Tree Project, PIE, Pursuing Individual Excellence, had shares of the pots of money that were around supporting their young people online. So the money kind of allowed them to continue some level of activity and still offer some support to their service users.
What did you learn?
There was some wondering within the sector about where that money was going to go and who's it going to go to. And, you know, I don't think we made it clear enough at the start. We presumed that everybody was going to know that we were going to give it all out. But again, communicating the fact that 100% of that amount was going to go to those voluntary community faith and social enterprise organisations, I think potentially we could have done that better right at the beginning. We did add a little bit to that as we went along in terms of tweaking the message. What I would say about Stockport is go back to 2017 was the last state of the sector report. So that's like a report on what the voluntary community sector brings in. The 2017 count, there was 1,689 of those organisations operating just in Stockport. It's probably over 2,200 operating locally now. It's something like 80% of those, that number, are micro organisations. The nearly 45,000 that we raised, we know was staying in Stockport, but also that it was going to have some really significant impact because it's the smaller groups. What, £1,000 doesn't seem a lot, but it can really be stretched. My key advice about it is find people who are passionate about that thing. So the people that we work with, we know have, as I've said, it's Keep Stockport Caring. So we want to target people who want to add to that and get it. The crowdfunding for me as well is about feeling part of something. It's about a quick way sometimes and a quick win to feel like you've actually really made a difference to something that you're passionate about. And I think also when you get lulls in funding, nobody really gives to a non-active campaign. You've got to keep it flowing. One way is like some strategic injections of cash. So if you've got a housing association adding some money in, put that in at a certain point. And also if you yourself, so from an individual basis.
Brilliant. Some great top tips there. So what happens now?
So there's been a bit of a legacy, I suppose, to the crowdfunding that I think we had about £6,000 left in that pot after we distributed everything. We didn't have enough left in the pot after we'd allocated all the money to do another funding round. So what we recognised from some of the applications we received, that some of the groups were small, not necessarily had the due diligence stuff in place that we needed, but were still doing great work. So we started to do some community online funding soups. And if you don't know what a community online funding soup, it was taken from like a Detroit soup idea where people would come along, they'd share a simple bowl of soup, they'd listen to local projects and they would get the vote. So we allocated £1,000 to a community soup to give it to trial it and see what it went like. And we had four organisations pitch for the money. So again, it was about setting the sector up to think differently about the support that they can give each other. So what we asked them to do was come, yes, with a financial ask, what would you use a small pot of money for? And the first prize was £750. The second prize was £250. But also come with a non-financial ask. What can other people who are attending this community soup help you with? I think we've done four now, so we've nearly distributed all that money. So we're just on a pause with the community funding soups, but we've been able to allocate funding to an additional 12 organisations that they didn't quite fit the funding round part. So again, we were able to extend the money to reach even smaller groups or specific projects in communities.
So the final question then is, thinking about your experience of doing all that and eking out all the money where possible and distributing every little single last drop of it, would you recommend our individuals or organisations in our sector to go down that crowdfunding route?
I would recommend that organisations think about crowdfunding. My word of caution would be, because I've seen a lot of people do it and think they can just launch one and then get really disappointed when it doesn't take off. You've got to stay on it. You don't just launch it on day one and wait for day 30 of your crowdfunder and see what's happened. It's like you've got to put the time and energy in, and I think you've got to have that time available to be able to keep doing that. One of the things we did was one weekend where I just decided that we were going to do a bit of a boost on social media and use the hashtag Keep Stockport Caring, obviously, but then also Stockport Super Saturday, I think we called it. But it was like just an add-on to kind of really try and boost a bit of momentum that week. I'm responding to people as they ask you questions about it and learn from our mistakes in terms of being really communicating your message. The more information people have, the better. And just make it easy. So if people do want to do offline donations, what is your other bits of fallbacks for people to get that money to you? What's your process? One of the other key things I think is people want to be really clear about what they're giving money to. We've said cash is tight, and that with crowdfunders, it's good to be quite specific. I wouldn't crowdfund for a general top up of reserves in your organisation, or we've got this idea, we're thinking of this. You need to be very specific about. So with the Keep Stockport Caring, we were very, this is for local voluntary community faith social enterprise sector. It will be staying in Stockport. It's to support the work of COVID. And the other top tip is follow up. Let people know there's nothing worse than giving to something and never knowing where that money went. So we did a big post campaign after Keep Stockport Caring to let people know 41 organisations had received money. Obviously the thank you, but people forget to do it. So it's like, what does your thanks look like? It's a social media campaign. Is it individual? Again, for people like housing associations who've put in a big lot of money, they want a bit of a report about where's that gone. So you've got to build that time in as well. You know, the customer journey is about keeping people involved all the way along. They're likely to come back on your journey again with you. So it's just making sure you understand all the steps, and there's work post crowdfunder as much as there is to get the crowdfunder off the ground.
Brilliant. Great tips, great advice. And congratulations on such a successful campaign, Simone.
Brilliant, thank you. Well, hopefully we can run one again in the future and we can put all those tips back into action ourselves.
So over the years, we've had some really great success with our crowdfunding campaigns for our mentorathons as well as our super events. So next, we're going to share some top tips on crowdfunding, some of the areas that you can focus on, and more importantly, what to avoid. As well as crowdfunding for Flourish campaigns, Nicola supported various female changemakers in their own campaigns. So Nicola, what are some of the golden rules to crowdfunding success?
Gosh, I mean, we've worked hard over the years and had these four successful campaigns to create a seed fund to invest in women changemakers. We started off using crowdfunding as a really useful tool that would give us cash, basically, that was few strings attached, unlike grant funding. And the money that we raise, we could then invest in the women that we support to lead the change they see needed. Like you say, through these mentorathon events that we run and through soup events, people pitching for support in a community sort of setting with local people making decisions on who gets that cash. I think if I look at, you know, what's key or what are the golden rules, First of all, I'd say do your research and make sure that the campaign's as focused as possible. You know, forewarned is forearmed, and that age-old saying, fail to plan is planning to fail. That's very true with a crowdfunding campaign.
I know a lot of people actually, you know, see the success of other people's crowdfunding campaigns and actually don't realise the amount of planning and hard work that goes into it. So, yeah, research is definitely a crucial part of it.
The second tip, although it's probably the first tip really, is make sure you've got a crowd to go to in the first place. You could put the best research and the best plan together, but if you're talking into a paper bag, there's no point. You know, lots of people have this misconception that you put your programme or your project, your campaign on the platform and they will come, and that's not the case. As I was saying with Heather earlier, so really do think about whether or not there's a community or a crowd that you can go to, and don't rely on social media alone, because you will definitely fail that way. Although these platforms, they can help you, can't they? They can help you get a wider audience, but they certainly won't bring that many new people. And I think I mentioned earlier that 90%, give or take, 80 to 90% of the people that back you will know you personally.
Yeah, there's definitely a formula to success in crowdfund campaigns. And I think that crucial stat about 80 to 90% people who support crowdfunding campaigns is really important, because, you know, it takes a long time to build up that community of people. There's so many different crowdfunding campaigns and causes out there, and crowdfunding campaigns traditionally have quite a small period of time to raise the money. So, you know, having that community of people that you can go to is really important.
Definitely.
And checking in with them beforehand.
You make a good point there. You know, in recapping what's important, that 4 to 6 week window is there partly because it's exhausting.
Yes.
You know, you need to put a limit on these things, and you're kind of creating a focus. And you know, whilst there are some sites that will let you go for longer than that or go for quite a long time, actually creating that sense of focus and the commitment and the deadline to get people to back you is key. And you mentioned a good point there about letting people know in advance. Absolutely. And getting your early adopters on board and emailing them, getting them all to back you straight away. One of the key points is around, you've really got to raise the first 20, some people say even 30% in the first week. You know, so that when people come to your site and that wider world and the social media starts to kick in, and we'll talk about that more in a minute, that people see your campaign and see it's moving and see the snowballs rolling down the hill, so that you're not a static thing and you've not just got £3.50 in there and you've been running 6 weeks and, you know, why would I back you? But you look on various crowdfund sites where, you know, after 2 or 3 weeks there's £100 and they're trying to raise 10,000, you know, and they've just not thought it through.
Yeah, I think it's really important to be strategic about this. And I know with the Flourish campaigns, we've raised, like you said, 20 to 30% of the funds beforehand. And it may be that, you know, all of that money doesn't go in straight away in the first week. You kind of drip feed it. So you get support from your backers beforehand, and you put a substantial amount, maybe 10 to 15% in, you know, in that first week, and then drip feed it over the next couple of days to make sure that there's some momentum.
The golden rule is that you've got 20 to 30% in that first week. If you've only got 10 or 15, you might not get there. But so long as you've got 20 to 30 in that first week, it will build and build and help that momentum that you were talking about there to get traction. I guess the last point that we sort of come back on is the point around social media. And whilst we've said, you know, you've got to know your crowd, a lot of people will know you directly, it's really important to have a strong social media sort of plan. And it really acts as a way of gaining attention, keeping in people's minds. If people have forgotten to back you, or they said, oh, they said they would and they've, you know, not done it yet, that social media campaign that both is thanking your investors and donors, showcasing what they're investing in, and maybe highlighting some of the rewards that you might want to put into a campaign is key to keeping this in people's minds, so that they make sure that they get involved. And we've used some really, you know, interesting ways of promoting the campaign over the years, from creating our own little gifts to having people have photos, coming up with a hashtag that people can follow to see how the campaign's going, things like that. Are all important. And I think that the only final point I was just going to make, being prepared to put the time in. This isn't just, you know, put it up there and hope that they back it. There's phone calls, there's emails, there's chasing people, there's thinking about the wider cocktail of backers that you could attract. Whatever I've worked on in the past, there's always been a kind of, whether you've got £5, £50 or £500, everybody's money's welcome. And sometimes it needs a different message and a different approach and a different email to the different audiences that you've got to get them to see why they should perhaps get involved in the campaign. And don't just think about your beneficiaries, or don't just think about the general public. Think about the business sector, the public sector, housing associations, universities. Who do you know? Who's in these institutions at different places that might not be able to give you a contract or invest in you directly, but would really like to see this thing come to fruition? And then they might have marketing budgets, or they might have other sponsorship or community support or training budgets that they can throw into the pot, and you can, you know, work with them in collaborative ways in the future. So just about being creative, really.
I think it just comes back to the first point that we raised, which is all about research and planning, isn't it?
Totally.
And the key thing with this, with crowdfund campaigns, is people need to be prepared to be in for the long haul, because, you know, the time that it takes to prepare, there's a lot more that goes on behind the scenes before your actual campaign goes live. Putting that time in to make contact, you know, do a community mapping exercise, see who your stakeholders are, you know, that'll all really benefit and help to create momentum and more engagement.
Absolutely. Just before we sort of close and start to wrap up our chit chat here, one thing that we haven't said is about making sure that you use different kinds of storytelling, I guess, to bring the need to life. So when you've got a crowdfund platform, having engaging photos, explaining clearly how and why you're going about what you're doing, and having a no more than a 1.5 to 2 minute video that's explaining exactly what you do, just to help to tell the story for people who perhaps aren't part of your crowd or aren't in the networks that you're in. And, you know, they are hearing about you for the first time to see would they want to pledge their support to this. The more that you can demonstrate the need and the demand, who's going to benefit, why you're worth backing, and what change is going to happen as a result of this, will really sort of make it relevant for them, and hopefully get them spending some of their cash and backing your campaign.
Yeah, I think it's just goes back to being as creative as possible. And, you know, if you can utilize a range of different digital media, tell your story in different ways, you know, it will capture the interest of a variety of people.
So good luck, get stuck in, and let us know how you get on.
So that's it for this month's Supporting Women in Social Enterprise podcast. If you have any crowdfunding tips to share, connect with us on Twitter, and you can find us at FlourishCIC. If you're loving what you're hearing and you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please do leave us a review. Or if you're listening elsewhere, do share your thoughts and ideas on social media and tag us in. You can also find out more about us and what we do, or drop us a line the old-fashioned way over at flourishtogether.org. But if you're craving a real-world event, join us next month for our How-To Festival, where we'll be bringing together a range of amazing social entrepreneurs to connect, share and collaborate and exchange knowledge. Book on via our Eventbrite page by searching Flourish CIC Eventbrite Manchester. We're also now on YouTube with some Watch Again workshops, so look out for those too.
And we'll hopefully see you for our next episode called Squaring Up to Imposter Syndrome, which is out in July. And we'll have some more great interviews with women who both tackle this head on and have got tips to share on how you can.
Supporting Women in Social Enterprise is a Mike Media production and is produced and edited by Vic Elizabeth Turnbull.